Good day and welcome to today's AHA Hospitals Against Violence webinar on hospitals as leaders in citywide violence prevention, strengthening Chicago's youth. Please note that participation on this call is by express written invitation from the AHA or AHA members only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law, including the Electronic Communication Privacy Act. Please also note that today's call is being recorded. All audience lines will be in a listen-only mode during the program. However, you are encouraged to submit questions throughout the conference. Simply type your question in the Ask a Question box located at the bottom left portion of your screen, and then click on the Submit button. Our speakers will address both phone and web questions at the conclusion of today's presentation. At this time, I turn the conference over to Bonnie Connors-Jellin. Please go ahead.
Thank you, David, and thank you to everybody who's joining us today, and good afternoon. I am Bonnie Connors-Jellin, Director of Maternal and Child Health and Member Relations for the American Hospital Association. Today's program is sponsored under the banner of the AHA, very top priority initiative, Hospitals Against Violence. And this is an association-wide, all-hands-on-deck effort to provide resources, best practices, and case examples showcasing how hospitals are working to combat violence in communities and also, very importantly, how they're working with strategies and otherwise on workplace violence in our own hospitals and healthcare systems. I invite you to explore the AHA-dedicated Hospitals Against Violence webpage at www.aha.org. You will find there, and I explored it today myself and was pretty much blown away, if you'll pardon the expression, but really impressed by how extensive there is a supply of taped webinars, podcasts, tools, and resources. So I really invite you to look there for examples of how you might be able to replicate some of what your colleagues are doing around the country related to hospitals, violence in their communities, and as I said, within their own hospitals and healthcare systems. The taped resources from today's session will be accessible, just so you know, just like everything else, on that website, Hospitals Against Violence, by the end of the week, we hope. No later than Monday, just let me say. As part of the Hospital Against Violence program, we'll focus, I want to draw your attention and I'll bring it back, I'll repeat myself at the end of this session about a very important date, June 9th. It's the National Day of Awareness. So we're asking you, when you get online, you'll see, please be a supporter and share a photo of your hospital staff and others joined together preventing violence. We are really just, it's a unity day, and it's a day for us all as hospital executives, leaders, colleagues, and so forth to express our willingness to work against violence in the community and, as I said, within the hospital. Before I turn the program over to our presenters, I'd like to explain how we'll handle questions and answers today, because really this is about engaging you and hearing your questions, not just didactic and hearing our presenters, although you can trust me when I say that this will be a good presentation. And here's how we handle Q&A. At any time during the presentation, you can submit a question online by typing it in the Q&A box on your screen. You might want to specify who the question is directed to, and you then will hit Submit Question. When the formal presentations are completed, we'll be taking questions for the Q&A box. There may be time afterwards so we can go live and take your questions by telephone, but we will see how that goes. We're fortunate today to be able to learn from our colleagues. I'm so appreciative at Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, and to provide an example of how hospital leadership can mobilize staff and then, of course, ultimately mobilize and engage their community to work together to prevent violence. With that, let me introduce our first presenter, Susan Hayes-Gordon, Senior Vice President, Chief External Affairs Officer, Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago. After setting the stage for us about Lurie and their efforts, she will introduce her colleague, Becky Levin, the Strategic Director of the Injury Prevention and Research Center at Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital, and she's also the Director of Strengthening Chicago's Youth Violence Prevention Collaborative. I'm so happy because Susan is an old friend of mine, and I'm happy to turn the program over to you.
Hi, Bonnie, and hi, everyone. Thank you so much. Lurie Children's is honored to be invited to be part of this today, and I'm really just doing a quick intro of Becky, and she is really tremendous. So let me just begin by saying, for over a century, the clinicians and child health experts at Lurie Children's used to have a few other names over 100 years ago. We have been committed to the health and well-being of all children in Chicago and beyond, and that has never been limited to just within the walls of our hospital. Always there have been outreach to the community. And so for years, we have assessed community needs and worked on evidence-based programs with the community so that we can make an impact, replicate good programs, and change or stop those that no longer show measurable results. And so we've all heard that hospitals today are called to be, quote, anchors in the community, and that is we are expected to share our expertise and resources for the good of our communities. In recent years, there have been new laws requiring hospitals in a more formal way to conduct and publish community health needs assessments with implementation plans to address the needs of the community, and of course we all do that. And that's just a little bit more formal than what we had done in prior years, and a great exercise. So for many years, our hospital has worked on many issues such as child passenger safety, preventing window falls, reducing childhood obesity. But in 2011, our CEO, Patrick Magoon, asked my team in external relations, along with our founders board and our injury prevention and research center, if we would host a series of listening sessions with violence prevention stakeholders throughout the city of Chicago. Pat really wanted us to hear from them about the needs in the community and also whether they thought Lurie Children's might be a convener of the interested parties so that together we could muster more strength in this fight against violence that plagues our children in their homes and in their communities. These listening sessions led to the establishment of Strengthening Chicago's Youth, or SCI, which Becky's going to talk about today. And so, obviously, we hired Rebecca Levin, who had led violence and injury prevention initiatives at the American Academy of Pediatrics for a decade. And Becky brought us expertise in a public health approach to violence prevention and knowledge of what other cities were doing to address violence. She has made amazing connections within the community to address violence, and particularly in under-resourced neighborhoods. And we know from our most recent community health needs assessment that really the social determinants of health are what have such an impact on child health and also on where the violence is occurring. So before Becky begins, I just want to say what we all know, that reducing violence in our communities is really complex and daunting, and maybe perhaps because of it, we are absolutely driven to try and make a measurable impact and to reduce the violence to achieve safer, healthier futures for children. We know that you have good ideas, and we look forward to hearing your ideas and advice as well as answering any questions, and are really, truly honored to be part of this webinar today. And so there, Becky, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Susan, and thank you to Bonnie and AJ for having me speak today. I'm really happy to be speaking to all of you about our experience in creating Strengthening Chicago's Youth, or SCI, and what we're up to now with SCI and what it can look like for a hospital to really take a role in collaborating with the community around violence prevention. So I'm also going to back up just a little bit to share some information on where SCI came from. And the obvious place to start is in acknowledging the tremendous impact that violence has on Chicago. We know it's frequently national, if not international, news that Chicago has the highest number of homicides in the U.S. I do think it's important to mention, though, that we do not have the highest homicide rate in the country. We're the third largest city in the country. Certainly New York and Los Angeles have made tremendous strides over the last 20 years in reducing their number of homicides, so that both cities now experience far fewer homicides than Chicago does. However, Chicago typically falls somewhere around 20th in the nation in per capita homicide rate. In 2016, the number of homicides we experienced grew tremendously, and so now we are in the 10 cities with the highest homicide rates. But again, we do not have the highest number, or we do not have the highest rate. We have the highest number. The impetus for Sky really was high-profile violence that our city was experiencing in the fall of 2009. In particular, an honor student, Darian Albert, 16 years old, who went to Fenger High School on the city's south side in the Roseland neighborhood, was beaten to death outside of his school. And someone took a video recording of the beating on their phone, and the video went viral. Now, from the perspective of the nation and the world, this murder happened in President Obama's backyard. This was the first year of the Obama administration. It really cast the spotlight on violence in Chicago. And so the Obama administration and leaders around the country and leaders locally started really thinking intensely about what to do about violence in Chicago. And our president and CEO of the hospital convened a task force to look at what was happening within the hospital and found that there was a lot of good work going on in the hospital to address violence. We had a really robust protective services team that did service and treatment and identification and research around child abuse. We had for years worked on gun violence prevention advocacy and research. We had some of the nation's experts on positive youth development. We had some of the nation's experts on trauma-informed approaches to supporting youth. But all of these efforts were really fragmented. And the task force determined that you can't address youth violence in isolation. Now, I think it would have been easy at the time to say we're going to work on improving the connection, the coordination among the efforts in the hospital. But instead, the leadership of the hospital said, we think that this idea that there's a lot of good work and not much coordination is probably a microcosm of what's going on in the city as a whole. So let's look at what the hospital might do more broadly in Chicago. So that led to conducting the listening sessions that Susan mentioned. So these were conducted in the spring of 2011, where the hospital's Injury Prevention and Research Center brought together different violence prevention stakeholders, community-based organizations, researchers, funders, healthcare providers, policy advocates. And to no one's real surprise, they verified the idea that there is a lot of good violence prevention work going on in Chicago and not much coordination, and that to enhance what we were doing, to improve what we were doing as a city in addressing violence, that coordination and communication among the organizations really needed to be improved. The participants in those listening sessions really said the hospital can help. They said, we see Lurie Children's as a potential neutral convener in this and really helping to ensure coordination and communication among violence prevention stakeholders in Chicago. So I was hired in the summer of 2011 to implement this, to get Sky started. And one of the first things I did was take those listening session findings and speak to additional key informants around the city and state about what was going on in violence prevention and what was needed and whether Lurie Children's serving as a convener would be beneficial, whether we would be credible in that. And by and large, everyone was thrilled to have Lurie Children's take on this critical role. So we developed Strengthening Chicago's Youth, which really is a collaborative of different stakeholders across Chicago and across the state. It is convened by Lurie Children's. So Lurie Children's really plays a leadership role, but we do not say in any way that this is only our effort. This is something that we do with thousands of public and private partners throughout the city of Chicago. The idea of SCI is to build the capacity among those stakeholders to connect, collaborate, and mobilize around policy systems and environmental change approaches to prevent violence. There are a lot of collaborative efforts going on that really focus on improving service provision itself by enhancing connections between service providers. That's not particularly our focus. We're focused on the bigger picture of policy systems and environmental change. And really, when it comes down to it, if you ask me to describe what SCI does in three words, I would say connect, connect, connect. It's really important that a hospital is doing this. And for those who aren't familiar with the role that hospitals can play, they often ask me, so why would Lurie Children's do this? Why would Lurie Children's be the best place to run a collaborative like SCI? So I always share several things with them. The first is the idea that Lurie Children's is a really respected institution, particularly as an advocate. So the hospital has a lot of access to policymakers that often community-based stakeholders don't have. Our leadership has terrific relationships in Springfield. They have terrific relationships with policymakers at the city level, at the county level, nationally, and many community-based organizations don't enjoy those relationships. So we try to share that access with our community partners and make sure we're providing conduits for them to share their voice in policy arenas. The whole approach of pediatrics being family-centered, culturally effective, developmentally appropriate, that's the kind of approach that's absolutely necessary for violence prevention. So it's very easy to translate that approach to healthcare to our approach to working with the community on violence prevention. I mentioned a couple of minutes ago that we have a lot of expertise. There's always been a lot of good work on different facets of violence prevention happening within the hospital. So we brought a lot of content expertise to SCI. We're a really well-known institution in the community. Virtually everyone in the Chicago area would have some connection to the hospital, whether it's a family member or a friend or a neighbor. Virtually everyone knows someone whose child benefited from the care they received at Lurie Children's. And so that credibility, that name recognition has been really important. And we serve as a neutral convener, which is really critical to being able to ensure authentic engagement. I say a lot that if the Chicago Mayor's Office or the Chicago Community Trust invite violence prevention stakeholders to a meeting, they will, of course, come to that meeting. But every person there isn't quite able to authentically engage because everyone is hoping that at the end of that meeting, their organization or their program will be the one that ends up getting funded or ends up being selected to be the main partner. Because we aren't a granting organization in our violence prevention work, we're able to provide a setting where there can be a bit more authentic collaboration. And because of that, we have grown tremendously. So we had our kickoff meeting just over 5 years ago. We had 130 people at that meeting, which was in itself attendance far beyond what we had anticipated. And now we are up to having about 4,500 people on our mailing list. We consider over 1,000 of them to be engaged, which means that they have come to one of our events or interacted with me or a member of our team in some way. In some ways, they've been more than just a passive recipient of our newsletter. They represent about 300 engaged organizations, and they're really spread throughout the city and the Chicago area. We take a public health approach to violence prevention, and I don't know about your cities, but in Chicago, that phrase, public health approach to violence prevention, has gotten a fair amount of attention recently. And one of the things we try to do is debunk some of the misunderstanding about what a public health approach to violence prevention might mean. So there are two primary misunderstandings. One that I hear a lot is that when you think about a public health approach to violence prevention, there's a misunderstanding that we are only interested in universal primary prevention strategies. So the sorts of strategies that are getting at everyone in the community that aren't really addressing the needs of people specifically at risk for violence. The other even more common misperception that I hear, and this is, I think, especially common in Chicago with some of the criticism that has been levied at law enforcement recently, is this idea that a public health approach is somehow the opposite of a law enforcement and criminal justice approach. That actually isn't the case at all. A public health approach really is multidisciplinary and includes law enforcement and criminal justice. It is not the opposite of it. So when we talk about a public health approach, we model it on what the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have described with their Striving to Reduce Youth Violence Everywhere, or STRIVE initiative, where there are three primary components. The first is consistent messaging about the preventability of violence. If you pick up the newspaper on a Monday morning in Chicago, you will read about how many people were shot and killed over the weekend. And the tone of those articles is that violence is inevitable. But we know that that's not the case. There are strategies that can be implemented to prevent violence, and we need to talk about that. So the second component of a public health approach is this idea that there are evidence-based violence prevention strategies. We don't need to constantly be reinventing the wheel. We have several decades of science under our belts now that show us what effective violence prevention programs and policies can look like. And the third component is multi-sector collaboration. The job of violence prevention is not solely the role of law enforcement or education or healthcare. It's all of our roles. So to go a bit further in how we talk about this public health framework, we have described some different components of what violence prevention looks like, and what a public health framework for violence prevention looks like. The first is that it incorporates a developmental approach that plays out over the life course. So youth violence gets a lot of attention, but violence is not something that emerges suddenly when a young person turns 13 or 15 or 17. Violence is something that emerges over the life course. It has to do with how infants are treated. It has to do with how we treat elders in our city and our society. So we really take a developmental and life course approach. We embed our work in the ecological model, where the risk and protective factors for violence and the strategies to prevent violence all exist at the individual, family, community, and society levels. We look across the prevention continuum. So, yes, we do that primary prevention work, the upfront preventing violence before it starts, but we're also concerned with secondary prevention. So, in the stick, the people who have already become involved in violence or are at risk for involvement in violence. We're also interested in tertiary prevention, which is a place where hospitals have a major role. So dealing with the aftermath, the treatment of people who have been injured by violence, or working with people who have become perpetrators of violence. We also are interested in work across different types of violence. So community violence is connected to bullying, to child abuse, to intimate partner violence, to structural violence. All of these types of violence are tied together. One of the reasons why this framework is so important, and looking at violence as a multifaceted issue is so important, is because it is complex, but we all have a role to play. So if you ask a teacher, a social worker, and a police officer if they are involved in violence prevention, they will all tell you yes, and they will all mean completely different things, and they should mean completely different things by it. But with a framework like this, they can see how their different roles in preventing violence relate to each other. However, the idea of violence prevention is still fairly amorphous. So we have broken it down into five component parts that we call our focus on five. It serves as our call to action for SKY. So these are five things that have relevance to individuals, community residents, parents, healthcare providers. It's also something that has relevance to policymakers. So these five items make up what's necessary to prevent violence. So the first is sustained investment in children and youth, and equitable access to high-quality mental health services, common sense approaches to gun violence prevention, a juvenile justice system that reflects what we know about adolescent development, and sustained investment in strong communities. To get to these five areas of improvement, we have four primary strategies in our work with SCI, and I'm going to talk about each of these in a little bit of detail. So the first is policy and advocacy strategy. The second strategy is around knowledge sharing. The third is encouraging conversations about the preventability of violence. And the fourth is something that hospitals are pretty uniquely situated to do, and that's to foster connections between community partners and academic partners. So in our policy and advocacy strategy, we advocate for a policy agenda. We have a policy agenda that is updated every other year to coincide with the General Assembly in Illinois beginning its new session. We advocate for that. We equip Susan and other members of the hospital's government relations team to be able to advocate for SCI's policy agenda. We also really collaborate with a lot of our partners and support their advocacy. So that could mean connecting partners to policy areas that are outside of their traditional bailiwick. For example, making sure that children's mental health stakeholders are connected to advocacy around juvenile justice reform and vice versa. We also provide training and technical assistance to partners who really aren't very familiar with advocacy and can help to equip them to be more active in the advocacy arena. A lot of our work around policy and advocacy is supported by a grant from the Langelos Foundation, where we have set as our rather ambitious goal for this three-year grant that we will establish ourselves as a private sector leader in comprehensive violence prevention in Chicago, violence prevention policy in Chicago. Our signature initiative under our work to address violence prevention policy and systems change is something called the Juvenile Justice Collaborative, where we have taken what we know as a hospital about the benefits of care coordination and how to do good care coordination for children and youth with complex medical needs, and we're applying that knowledge to developing and implementing a care coordination model for youth involved in the juvenile justice system. We're implementing that in partnership with 10 youth service providers in Chicago. We're currently conducting a demonstration project for this effort, which is a very exciting system improvement for the juvenile justice system in Cook County. Our second strategy is knowledge sharing. I consider this really our bread and butter. We have monthly trainings that are really focused on imparting skills to the participants. We have quarterly meetings that are really focused on networking and stakeholders coming together to discuss actions we can take collectively to prevent violence. We have a newsletter that comes out twice a month. That is probably the most comprehensive source of information about violence prevention events and resources in Chicago. We have a very active social media presence. We also participate in a lot of coalitions and attend different events. So I do a lot of that citywide, and we have a member of our team who's our community programs coordinator. So he's kind of an old-school Chicago community organizer in the way that Barack Obama cut his teeth. And so his role is to be our ear on the ground. He participates in a lot of different community coalitions. For those neighborhood coalitions, it can be really challenging to kind of lift their heads up and look at what experiences occurring in other neighborhoods. So that's the role that Ed, our community programs coordinator, plays, where he can seed ideas from one coalition to another. And then we're also building our ability to provide really robust support for community organizations and community coalitions capacity building. Right now we are serving as the facilitator for a grant that Cook County received to do violence prevention, community assessment, strategic planning, and implementation in South Suburban Cook County. Our third strategy is to encourage conversations about prevention. We base a lot of this on a letter to the editor that was published in the Chicago Sun-Times in the winter of 2015, so in December 2015, by our CEO, Pat Magoon, that really called on all Chicagoans, but with a particular focus on policymakers, to roll up your sleeves and do something to prevent violence. The idea that every single one of us has a role to play. A big part of this idea of building individuals' recognition of their need to play a role in preventing violence and building the political will to prevent violence in Chicago is that we need to improve the media coverage of violence. I mentioned that based on a lot of the tone of the media coverage, you would get the sense that violence is inevitable in Chicago. We really think it's important to, in our role as a research institution and an institution with a lot of content expertise on violence, to help the media understand that violence is a more complex issue than just counting the number of homicides and shootings and just reporting on homicides as individual events, that they really have to be looking at the root causes of the violence in Chicago. And equally important, they have to be covering the good work that's going on, that the negative, only focusing on the dire situation without focusing on the good prevention and response work that's happening, contributes to a sense of hopelessness in communities. And then our fourth strategy, which, as I mentioned, is something that's pretty unique in terms of hospitals' ability to do it, is forging connections between community and academic partners. Our main initiative in this is that we are nearing completion of an NIH grant called Community Academic Collaboration to Prevent Violence in Chicago, where we were able to meet with community stakeholders. We had 14 community meetings with community residents and representatives of community organizations to ask what they think violence researchers should be studying. We know that there are community residents who have a lot of ideas about what's going on with violence in Chicago. Why is the violence problem as bad as it is? Why does it look the way it does? Why did the violence problem increase in 2016? They're sitting around on their porches. They're talking in church. They're talking at the grocery store about this. They're framing it as research questions, but those are research questions, and it's our job to kind of elicit that and provide a conduit to get that information, those questions, to researchers. We also support our community partners. So something that I do fairly frequently is that a community partner will reach out to me for help with evaluation, and we will help connect them to a researcher from within the Lurie Children's and Northwestern Medicine community or from other research institutions in Chicago. We also provide some training and technical assistance on research, use of data, evaluation. And then lastly, we're conducting a project called the Violence Data Landscape, where we have been looking at how to improve connections among violence data stakeholders and really how to do a better job of getting violence data used to inform policy and practice rather than just data for data's sake. And that is the end of my formal presentation. I know I wanted to allow plenty of time for Q&A because I always think that's where the best discussion happens.